It's Macca and Toes in now with the movie review. This is one of my favourite features because you are so you're a cool guy, but you get animated. You get all excited about things. You know, that's what I like about you. So I mean, we're talking movies.
Yes, so, we are.
Come on, what movies are we talking?
This week we're talking Fast and Furious 7 and Far From the Madding Crowd from two opposite ends of the cultural spectrum. So you have Fast and Furious 7, which is all about, well, women in bikinis and fast chrome things and driving in the desert and, like, you know, crashing things and blowing stuff up. And you're Far From the Madding Crowd, which is a Thomas Hardy of things set in 1870 Dorset in England. So, yeah, it's a good... This is actually a good week. It's a good week of films that I've seen. And but I think I'll start off with Fast and Furious 7. So anybody who has been paying any little attention knows, okay, obviously it's the seventh film in a series, Fast and Furious. Started way back in like the 90s with the first one, and this film, I'm just going to say from the word go, it is totally unrealistic, and this is something that they have embraced wholeheartedly. That the filmmakers, they know it's unrealistic. They know that the things that they're doing on screen could not really be done. That these people should be dead many times over. They have leant into this so hard. They've committed to how unrealistic this thing is so hard that it just becomes enjoyable. It becomes enjoyable because, you know, I'm watching a cartoon. I am literally watching a live action cartoon. There's bits in it, right, where these guys, they parachute out of a plane in their cars. Like, they're right. This sort of like military sort of, they back up, they drive out, they reverse out of these of a plane in cars. They're falling down faster than they pull the parachute, and they float down to the ground, and then they hit the ground and drive off, get rid of the parachute and just drive off on this road.
Just like you would, yeah.
Just like you would. I mean, well, who wouldn't do that on a Saturday? So what they've done with the films, because originally, you ever seen a film called Point Break?
Rings a bell. I don't know.
With Keanu Reeves and Gary Busey and all it's, and Patrick Swayze in it as well and all that. And the first one was essentially like Point Break was all about extreme sports and like surfing and skateboarding. The first one was like remaking Point Break, but using cars instead. So a policeman is going undercover to try and catch these thieves, but then he gets a little bit too attached to the thieves and all that kind of stuff. And then they tried that going with that kind of storyline for a while, where it was really about the cars. Mm-hmm. In the fifth movie, they jettisoned all that and went, it's all about the crazy stunts. So the fifth one, they had them dragging a safe, using two cars to drag a safe through the streets of Rio with no regard for physics. The sixth one had like the Fast and Furious 6 had like the world's longest runway ever, where they're having this fight scene while this plane is taxiing for takeoff, and it takes ages. And people actually calculated it and said, from what happens in the film, they had a runway which is about 3 miles long. Most runways are like, you know, around about a mile long or something, yeah. Like that. It was like the world's longest runway, and this one just has like all these crazy stunts. And what they've changed it into, they've changed it almost into, you know, the film The Expendables.
Yeah,
it was where what they do is that they grab all these action stars and they just put them in the same film. And they've started doing that a little bit with the Fast and Furious movie, because this has Kurt Russell in it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it has Kurt Russell. So it seems like if they've had somebody who's had some connection with cars, they'll get them into the film. So it has The Rock, has Vin Diesel, it has a guy called Tony Jaa, who was in a film called Ong Bak. He's a he's an Indonesian... I'm getting this wrong. No, he's Thai. I think the Indonesian one is the raid. He's a Thai martial artist who is... If you ever see any of his films, the whole thing about it is that he does all his stunts. There's no stuntmen. They have no safety nets or anything like that. Watch Ong Bak or something like that. The stunts these guys does is crazy. And then they just get him into the Fast and Furious movie. He doesn't say much because he's not there to speak. He's there to do crazy stuff and beat people up. So they've got him in there. They've got like a lady called Ronda Rousey, who is one of the UFC fighters. So it's like they just keep piling all these people into these films and put it all, and it's becoming almost like a sort of Expendables of people who do things with cars, and then they do all these crazy stunts. There's a bit where they go to the I think they're in Abu Dhabi or in Dubai, and they have a stunt where they drive a car, and they're walking around this car, and they have all these sort of like, you know, car porn shots of, oh, look at this car, it's so good, and they give you all the specific, like how this can go from 0 to 125 in like 6 seconds, and oh my god, I can't believe this guy has bought this car. This rich sort of like, you know, Arab prince has bought this car and keeps it locked up in a cage, and so they're in a they're in a high rise that's about 20 stories up, and they're driving this multi-million pound car around this guy's flat, and the only way to get out of it is that they drive, because it's three, imagine that there's three towers standing beside each other. They drive the car from one of them, crash through the glass, and they fly through the air and they crash into the second tower. And then they keep going and crash into the... It's just full of crazy stunts that would never happen in real life. But that is the joy of the film. Is the joy of the film. I mean, the storyline is, quite frankly, is inconsequential. It's something about... I mean, even it's even from the opening shot of the film, it starts off with Jason Statham looking out across London. And Jason Statham, who has, I think he's done really, really well for himself. Like from, I remember him in Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels all those years ago, and he's become this sort of Hollywood hard action man.
Yeah, definitely.
And he's actually pretty good at it. So it starts off with him at standing at the, because he is the brother of the bad guy from the sixth film. And so in the sixth film, they beat the bad guy, and this guy is now in a coma in a hospital in London. And you just have him looking out across London. And he's just sort of like, you know, he does this whole speech about, don't worry, brother. It's like, I'm going to go clean up your mess. And then the camera, they have this scene where as he's talking, you can see, it starts off with him, and as the camera moves, and then you see like a doctor and a nurse of cowering in the corner, and you're like, why the hell are they cowering? This guy's just visiting his brother. Then the camera turns on, and you see the carnage that he's essentially shot and blown his way up into this hospital just to go see his brother. And like, he walks out, and the camera follows him as you see what he's done to the hospital just to get in there. And it sets the scene for the entire movie that this is a stupid, fun, unrealistic movie.
Over the top, but fun, yeah.
It's over the top. It's a live-action cartoon. There is no other way of going about it. It's a live-action cartoon.
Do you need to watch the other six before you watch this one?
No. I mean, the films are standalone. There are certain things that tie, because like there's certain things about, okay, why is he so annoyed at them? Why is he after them? And all that kind of stuff. You would get those bits of the story while they tied. And they did some clever things with the timeline, and how essentially the fifth film actually chronologically takes place before the third film. But
right.
Yeah, I know. It's a head scratcher. Yeah, so no, people have written blog posts about what the heck is going on? What is the timeline of the Fast and Furious movies? Because people who die in the third film actually show up in the fifth film. And then they also in the sixth film, and you're like, what's going on? So essentially the fifth and the sixth films take place before. So, but it doesn't really matter, to be honest with you.
The one thing, my son went to see it, and I don't think he's gone to see the other six, but he thoroughly enjoyed it. And he just thought that it was a really wonderful thing that is a Paul Walker.
Yeah, yeah,
because he's actually in it, but he died in 2013.
Oh, well, he died while they were filming it, because I think the whole film is colored by this thing that you know Paul Walker's died. I mean, the song that was number one in the charts for the last 2 weeks, it's now number two in the charts, See You Again, is a tribute to Paul Walker, and it is the song that ends this film. It's on the soundtrack for this film, it's tied to the release of the film, and it's a tribute to him.
Right.
I think he had filmed about 90% of the film by the time he died. So they use like CGI stuff, and two of his brothers, I think it's Kit and Cody Walker, because I think they look kind of like him. They stood in for him for a couple of the shots. So the things that they need to finish, they came in and they were body doubles for him essentially. And there's bits of the film where it adds it an extra level of emotion that you wouldn't necessarily have, as you know this guy died.
Yeah.
And because these same groups of people have been making these films for so long, they have this thing where Vin Diesel, he just stands around and he just growls and he just says, I ain't got friends, I got family. And he speaks like that the whole time. And so he keeps, his character Dom Toretto keeps going, family, it's all about family, family, family. And he does that throughout the whole films. But this time around, when he's talking about family, something about it gets you, because you know Paul Walker's dead, and like you know, through, and obviously you're thinking, how are they going to work it with this character? Because obviously he's died, so is his character going to die during the course of this film? And so there's all these things that, like, you know, that almost every single scene that he's in,
don't give it away,
I'm not going to give it away, but because every single scene is colored by the fact that you know this guy died in real life, and it adds this weird, unexpected layer of emotion, and has this emotional punch that you wouldn't expect it to have because it's a very, very silly film.
We're running out of time, but I want to ask you about Fast and Furious 7. Give it a mark out of 5.
I'll give it a 4 out of 5.
And where does the first one sit with out of 10, out of 5?
Well, the first one's probably a 3.
Right, okay, because I gave that 10 minutes and I couldn't get into it, so maybe I could go back to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Different mindset, maybe. So, Far From the Madding Crowd.
Far From the Madding Crowd. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I was on the show and I spoke about a film called Sweet Francais that had an actor called Matthias Kornhertz in it, and I said that he was under threat. He's a very, very good actor, very, very good Belgian actor. And I said that he was under threat from becoming typecast as the forbidden love interest, because in that film there were two trailers, one for Far From the Madding Crowd, one for A Little Chaos, and he was in each one of those playing what seemed to be the same character. I did not like Sweet Francais. I mean, if you go back a couple of weeks, I gave it quite a bad review. But this I really, really liked. It's based on Thomas Hardy's novel, but of the same name, Far From the Madding Crowd. Has Carey Mulligan playing Bathsheba Everdeen. Hunter Schoenert plays Farmer Oak. And it's all about, essentially, I really, really like this film. It's a kind of film that it wouldn't have been made if it wasn't a book first. Because I think the characters are just, they're well drawn out. They're kind of like a bit complex. It's not straightforward that, okay, this is this guy, this is the bad guy, this is the good guy, it's essentially about Bathsheba Everdeen, and she gets an inheritance of a farm.
Right.
And shortly before she gets the inheritance for the farm, she is proposed to by this guy, Farmer Oak, who's like, he sold everything he has to, like, set this farm, he's trying to make this farm into a business. But then he has a sheep dog that goes a bit crazy and chases his entire herd off a cliff in Dorset. So he loses his whole livelihood. He has like nothing else. He owes money to people. So he ends up getting work at the same farm that she's actually at. So he proposes marriage to her. She goes and there's another farmer who proposes marriage to her. And then there's a third guy who also proposes marriage to her. And it becomes this sort of like love quadrangle of who's she going to go for, what's going to happen. And all the characters are actually very, very well sketched out and brilliantly, brilliantly acted. I was actually like, it's not a romantic comedy. It's actually a romance movie that I was like, man, maybe I should go read this book because this is actually really, really good. I mean, and there's great performances all around. Michael Sheen as Farmer Baldwood I just love that. I love Michael Sheen, but I really, really like that character. I mean, when you look at the motivations for each of the characters in this story, I just think that some of them are great. Even the idiots, like one of the people that she actually marries, he could just have been a very, very simple, down the line, good for nothing idiot who just wants to take all of her money. Yeah. But when you look at some of his motivations or why he is the way he is, it's just interesting and intricate, and I really, really, really like this film.
Mark it at 5?
4 out of 5.
4 out of 5, okay. Yeah. Interesting to see that Mark Wingett is in this movie.
Okay.
He plays a bailiff, and he was in The Bill for about 25 years. So it's nice to know that he's still working.
It's the kind of film that will be filled with a whole bunch of, like, you know, jobbing British actors just all around the place that would have probably been there for ages, but will show up and do, like, 5 lines and then leave. But yeah, it's a really, really good film.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
Do you know what you're doing in 2 weeks?
I do not know what I'm doing, but I am very much looking forward to watching Pitch Perfect 2.
Right.
I was listening to like the people who just came in and you were talking to them and they spoke about the cup song from Pitch Perfect. And Pitch Perfect 2 is coming out and I am looking forward to watching that.
Brilliant. Okay, yeah. We'll love to hear from you on that then, because as I say, we'll maybe get the cups out and do the cup thing. It's a minute to 12. Thanks, Tozin.